protect this field. We must protect this field. We must protect this field. Let it work, but this is our hunt for the San Diego Seals. Welcome, everybody, to another edition of the Seal City SD podcast. So, originally, the gang had talked about having a recording in the parking lot at this Friday's game against the Saskatchewan Rush. Andy and Nick were going to go to the game, and we were going to augment that with an interview that Andy and I conducted with Coach Patrick Merrill of the Seals. Andy and I went there this morning, and it went really well. It turned out to be a really great interview. I think we asked a lot more. I think Coach Merrill, when he goes on, like, you know, 91X, or he goes on really most of the radio stations here, or TV, or morning shows, or whatever, I think they just ask him, hey, it's real exciting atmosphere there, right? There's, like, trapeze artists in the halftime, there's lowriders, how about those sirens? And I don't think there's a lot of talk about the nuts and bolts and the X's and O's of lacrosse. So Andy and I set out to conduct, like, a real legitimate talk about lacrosse with the coach, and I think it went really well. Coach Merrill was really engaging, and really the interview went so well that we made the decision just to post this podcast on its own. So you know, I wanted to record this intro and kind of introduce what we did, because it was really exciting for us to talk to him, really interesting, and hopefully it's interesting for you guys. Well, we here at Seal City SD are honored to have an interview today with our esteemed leader of the San Diego Seals, Coach Patrick Merrill. Thanks for joining us for an interview.
That's quite the introduction. Thank you, guys.
Well, I mean, esteemed, I think, is pretty good. I could have done a lot better, I think. I mean, you're leading an expansion team into first place in the last month of the season. Like, I think esteemed is probably an undersell, if anything.
Oh, I appreciate that, but I think... No, I think that was enough, more than enough.
I mean, if you want, I can point out some downsides. Like, we talked about Media Day, and Coach Merrill here tried to teach me how to do the around the back kind of...
Behind the back.
Yeah, behind the back thing. Yeah. Couldn't pull it off. So I do have some questions about some of his coaching skills after that experience.
I'll take full responsibility.
Well, so a lot of people... We've talked a lot about it on the podcast, but... Mm-hmm. You know, NLL lacrosse is kind of a unique business and sport in that mm-hmm. the players they're not full time. Like mm-hmm. you were just discussing how you're going to go pick some players up at the airport. Today mm-hmm. is Thursday. Game day is tomorrow. Mm-hmm. You know, the league or the team, I'm not sure which, but they fly players out for the game and for practice. A lot of people are so used to like NFL where it's a full time job. You're watching mm-hmm. tape all the time. You're mm-hmm. practicing, you're studying the playbook. As a coach, how do you get players ready during the week? Cause like, Dan Dawson is a firefighter. Like, he's mm-hmm. got a day job. All mm-hmm. these guys have day jobs. How do you get them game plans, videos? Like, how do you prep them with one practice a week?
Yeah, I think that that's a good question. But I think saying that they kind of have day jobs is a little bit underselling kind of who these guys are. I think you know, they... In my opinion, they have two full-time jobs, you know, and being a player for as long as I was, you know, that was definitely felt like that as a player as well. But it's a tricky balance, you know, we talk a lot about that, and we try and quite frankly, the teams that prepare themselves the best during the week usually have the most amount of success on the weekends when we play games. So that's a huge, huge part of, I think, our identity as a team, is that we have great veteran leaders that have been around that realize that, you know, first and foremost, you have to take care of your bodies. So they're in touch with our strength and conditioning coaches almost every day, making sure they're working out, getting treatment, making sure they're preparing their bodies physically for the grind that presents itself on the weekends. Because as you know, it's a pretty fast-paced physical game, so you got to get your bodies right. But in terms of mental preparation and film and all that type of stuff, we dive pretty deep into that. You know, obviously in today's day and age with technology, that certainly helps. So, you know, we have offensive and defensive conference calls every week to make sure that the guys are going over, you know, reflecting on the performances from the previous weekend, but also preparing for the following weekend. But then we also, you know, go through scouts and prep you know, with regards to film and scouting reports and that sort of thing, starting really early in the week. And then guys are responsible on their own to report to us on what they're doing, you know, how much film they're watching and specific things that they need to improve on and bring to their game going into whoever the matchup is on the weekend. So there is a lot that goes into it. I would say that these guys are very, very, you know, but they're the best players in the world too. I think people people don't understand that, is that these guys are the best at what they do, and they put a lot of time and effort into developing themselves into the best pro athletes in their sport in the world, and but they have to be adaptable. You know, they have to be adaptable, and they have to have a balance that works.
Yeah, and so all that prep that you do early in the week, tonight's practice, you have your one practice today before tomorrow at 5. Is that basically implementing a lot of those game plan concepts that you lay out early in the week? That's what you do tonight.
Yeah, that's usually it is the night before game, you know, especially at this stage in the season, because we have a lot of guys that, you know, like I said, it's a grind, right? So that we have a lot of guys that are banged up and that sort of thing too. But it really depends, you know, like sometimes we'll use practice and practice pretty hard, you know, if we think we need it, or, you know, and spend some time on more strategy related stuff, or kind of the other way around. It really depends on what's going on and kind of the tone and temperature of the team.
Yeah. How much with a team like Saskatchewan, who you guys play tomorrow, you've played twice already this year. Is there less strategy and game plan implementation because you know them well enough and you know what they're going to do, or is there more because you know them so well that you're on your second and third wrinkles and counter moves?
Yeah, it's really good questions, guys. You guys do your homework for sure, and you watch closely. That's great. So. No, I think actually just because we play them recently, they're really well coached, and they're part of their success is how are the systems that they play and how prepared they are for each matchup. So we know that they're going to make adjustments from a couple weeks ago, and we're that loss that they had here a couple weeks ago is going to be very fresh in their minds as well. So they're going to be very motivated, and they're going to be looking for ways to break us down, right, offensively and defensively. So we're going to have to throw some new stuff at them, quite frankly, and we're going to have to, you know, refine some things and clean some things up. But, you know, again, we're going to expect a different game plan from them.
Well, is Austin going to play? Because, I mean, that would greatly affect your game plan, right? And I think we're going to ask a question later on how, you know, even I, as a semi-not-skilled lacrosse viewer, can tell that Austin Stotts gets double-teamed, triple-teamed, and that opens up opportunities for other players. So, A, is he going to play? And B, how does that going to affect your game plan for tomorrow?
Yeah, we're honestly not sure yet. He was it was kind of a 50-50 game time decision on Saturday night, whether he was going to play or not. You know, it's really, you know, but we had a short week, so long week because we came off of two losses. So mentally and emotionally, it was a long week, but it was a short week physically for these guys. So, you know, we're going to see at practice tonight how he reacts to the therapy that he went through over the course of the week and see what happens. But to answer your question, yeah, Austin does a lot of things for our offense. You know, he's and he brings an element to our offense that that's hard to replace. You know, he's physical. He can get inside. You know, teams have to respect him with his outside shot as well. You know, and he does a lot of things to open up opportunities for other guys. You know, but again, we think we have a lot of depth, and we wouldn't be in the position that we're in fighting for first place if we didn't have depth. And we believe in the rest of the guys that are, you know, that are going to be out there battling for this this weekend if he can't play. So, yeah, it would change our game plan a little bit, but we're still confident either way.
What about Buchanan?
You know, Kyle's in kind of the same boat. You know, he suffered a different type of injury last weekend around the same time. Austin got hurt as well and wasn't able to play on the second game of the back-to-back. But again, you know, Kyle's a really important player to us in a lot of ways. He's one of our captains. He's a leader on and off the floor. You know, and I know he's going to be battling to try to get in the lineup this weekend. But he'll be a game time decision. That being said, again, we have a lot of guys that, you know, last weekend when Kyle couldn't play, Connor Kelly stepped in and had a huge night and was able to break out.
Rookie of the Week.
Yeah, he was Rookie of the Week. And he was able to get touches that he wasn't previously able to get when Kyle's in the lineup. So that's a positive. So, yeah, we just got to kind of roll with the punches and try to bring our best effort either way.
So is it difficult for you as coach? Like, are you coming into that game with, like, three separate game plans depending on how practice goes today? I mean, because Austin Stotts, to me, seems kind of transformative in how much attention he gets on the floor. So, I mean, is that double the game prep for you? Like, is it really hard for you going into this game?
I wouldn't say it's double. I think we you're right. We do prepare either way. I wouldn't say it would be, you know, two or three different game plans. It would be more you know, it'd be more about kind of putting other guys in positions to be successful without him, with or without him, right? And I think Kyle kind of brings that as well, just in different ways. You know, he can do a lot of things that not a lot of other guys can do in the league in general. They're more subtle than maybe what Austin brings. But, yeah, I wouldn't say it'd be changing our game plan altogether. But it'd be more, like I said, you know, creating different types of ways to get other guys more involved.
I want to ask about Casey Jackson. Love his game. He's having an incredible year. And I wonder, coming into this year, he had 4 career goals, I believe. You got him in the 8th round of the expansion draft. When you pick up a player like that, do you look at his success this year as just getting the opportunity that he needed? Had you identified something in his scouting report that you saw that if he did get an opportunity, he would blow up? Or was there some way that he was being misused in the past, or maybe did he transform his game in some way? What do you make of the reasons for his breakout?
I would say all of the above in terms of what you mentioned. You know, I think, first of all, you know, we watched him pretty closely in the summer. He plays up in the WLA in British Columbia, and that's a lot of the Western NLL players play there in the summer. Mm-hmm. So he had a really, really good summer. So that was part of it in terms of why we selected him in the expansion draft. But also, you know, in a 9-team league, you know, mm-hmm. before us and Philly came into the mix, it's hard. Not a lot of guys get opportunity to get a chance to show what they can do, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I would say all the guys that we selected in the expansion draft, you know, were world-class players that just never got a chance, mm-hmm. you know, and
that's kind of what you're left with in expansion drafts a lot of times.
Yeah, well, absolutely. And that's not a negative. I think that's a positive. And I think, you know, New York and Rochester are going to have the same opportunity to have good teams right away, because there are a lot of world-class players out there that just haven't had a sniff in this league yet. And it's just going to provide more opportunity going forward with more expansion. But, you know, if you look at all the guys that we selected in the expansion draft, they've all been really key contributors to our success so far. And I think it's more about opportunity. But we also have a bit of a misfit mentality, mm-hmm. you know, where guys got looked over and maybe didn't get the respect or credibility that they deserve, credibility that they deserve coming in, and they came in with a bit of a chip on their shoulder. I know Casey was one of those guys where he felt like he could have contributed more in Vancouver, and they didn't really give him much of a chance. So we gave him the opportunity, and he's been able to step up and make the most of it so far.
So, like, you as coach, are you stoking that fire in those players? I mean, are you pointing out to them that other teams passed on them and
well, 100%. I didn't really need to be honest, but 100%. I think that was more of our identity early on. Is that you know coming out of training camp is that we weren't going to treat ourselves or talk about being an expansion team at all. We wanted to come out and punch people in the mouth right away and show them what we could do. And I think now, it's still a part of our identity. But now I think, you know, that we're past that. You know, now we're playing to win. You know, and they have that mentality now. So, you know, and we've developed a bit of a target on our back as well. So it's a bit of a different sense. You know, it's a different feeling in the room now. And we've talked about that a lot this week, is that we went into Georgia and we went into New England and teams were ready for us. Mm-hmm. You know, teams, you know, we weren't going to surprise anybody, right? And they showed us that respect, and they, and they were ready and taught us a lesson. So and we weren't prepared. So, you know, again, we needed to get back to kind of being playing with that level of hunger, but also understanding that, you know, we're fighting for first here. And, you know, if we let up for a second, you know, teams are going to be trying to take that away from us. So we got to be, you know, getting ready to peak at this time of year, not taking any steps backwards.
So you wear two hats, GM and coach, and there's been a lot made this year of your team being this mix of older players getting another opportunity and younger players getting their first opportunity. How do you, when you're balancing your two responsibilities as a GM and coach, how do you think about roster construction in terms of what's best for this season versus what's best long term, and kind of figuring out that balance between veterans and young players?
Yeah, well, I think you know, it's a bit of a balancing act, because you know, it's really hard to develop players in this league, you know, without giving them game action, you know. Yeah. So we don't practice a whole lot, as you guys mentioned earlier, and that sort of thing too. So, but we do have to think about the future, and you know, there are two. We're going to lose two more players in expansion this summer, which is crazy because we're going to finish our first year this year. But
yeah, you should have some sort of tiered understanding, like you only lose one, everybody else loses two, or something.
Yeah, if you can mention that to the league, that'd be nice. But you know it's a challenge, but at the same time we had to prepare for it, and I think you know, a lot went into that, you know. And it's not just me, it's you know, one of our assistant coaches, Josh Sanderson, is helps me. He's our assistant GM, and Steve Govett our president has had a lot of experience being a GM in this league. And so you know, it's been a team effort. You know, but I think what my job is first and foremost is focusing on winning now, you know, and putting ourselves in a position where, you know, the guys in the room are working towards that and focusing on that. And I think, you know, if we focus on that, you know, guys are going to get better, you know, the young guys are going to learn, you know, what it takes to win in this league, and they're going to learn from the older players in terms of what that mentality is all about, and form good habits that they're going to bring to their own personal and individual development. But also for the older guys as well. I mean, that's what they're here for. You know, they're not here to be another coach. They're here to help us win and lead more by example. And I think our captains have really done a really good job of that. You know, and veteran players have really done a good job of that right from day one, is that, you know, just kind of leading by example.
You mentioned the difficulty of developing players. I specifically wonder about guys like Kelly and Fields, who have a you know, better track record in the field game.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not only trying to develop in this league, but they're kind of learning a new game
100%.
In some ways. So with having only one practice a week and not being able to build an entire offense around them right now, there are other guys who get those touches. How do you develop their games to become, you know, the next guys that you can lean on?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of different aspects to that. And I believe me, I don't have all the answers. I think I think every coach and GM is looking for those answers. But you know, the way we approach it is, you know, there's a couple aspects to it. I mean, the guys that we bring in, we try to kind of do our homework in terms of guys that have the character that will commit to it and kind of put their egos aside, because they're used to being the man wherever they've been, right? Mm-hmm. From the high school level on, you know, in the outdoor game, and so put their ego aside so that they can, you know, and you know, have that level of commitment. You know, most of those guys moved here, mm-hmm. To be in the market so that they can just be sponges and be immersed in the whole culture of what we're building here every day during the week. You know, but also, you know, like I said, the skill set is really important too. So we try to scout them in a way where we think that they, what they do well in outdoor can apply, mm-hmm. and translate well to the indoor game. And I think a lot of those guys have proved that they can do that. You know, they're tough guys. They, you know, and we also have, one of our scouts is Ryan Boyle, who I played with in New York and Orlando, and
he's a Gilman guy, right?
He's a Gilman guy. He's a Baltimore guy. Went to Princeton, mm-hmm. but had a lot of success in the indoor game. And you know, he was in New England this past weekend working with some of those guys and having conversations with those guys during the week. You know, here's what I'm seeing in your game. You know, here are times where I think that you should be dodging and times when you should be moving the ball. You know, why aren't you cutting the middle enough? You need to just be setting harder picks. Things like that during the week. And I know our offensive coach, Josh Sanderson, spends a lot of time on that as well because, you know, he's a Hall of Fame player himself. He grew up playing the indoor game, you know, pretty much exclusively throughout the course of his life and his career. So to have those resources for those guys, I think really helps. And it's the same at the defensive end. So Billy Greer. So we have some American guys too that have only played, you know, that were first team All-Americans like Garrett Eppel and guys like that, Nick Acello and Mikey Slaw. Those guys were really, really good outdoor players that are trying to learn how to play defense in our league. So I think Billy has done a really good job with those guys as well.
So you're in the unique position as a coach where you are coaching your brother, Brody, who's one of the great players in NLL history, great player at Georgetown before then. And how is coaching that? Like, do you guys ever have brotherly conflicts? Is it weird?
Yeah, it's not weird. It's not weird in the sense that we have brotherly conflicts because we've been having brotherly conflicts since he was born. You know how it is with any siblings, right? I think that's actually kind of helped us. I think both in our playing careers and now with this dynamic is that, you know, we're honest with each other. You know, and if he thinks that I'm not doing my job, he's going to be pretty honest with me, even in ways that you know, other people might not be. So it's been good that way. You know, I try to stay out of his way as well, because I feel like he's at a point where he knows, you know, when he makes mistakes and there's no one that approaches the game in a more professional level than he does as well. So, you know, I don't have to worry about him preparing for the weekend, keeping guys accountable, keeping himself accountable, and that sort of thing. I think more, I'm just there for him, just like the other coaches are, and that sort of thing too. And you know, I know how competitive he is, so I just want to give him that type of support so that we can have a winning team. So it's honestly hasn't been that weird. But it is a bit of a tricky balance for sure.
How much of what you guys do defensively is built around what he can do out there? He seems absolutely central and uncanny knack for ground balls. He's got he's on pace to set a league record for ground balls this season, right?
Yeah, we definitely rely on him quite a bit in that area. I think he's learned. And I think, like all veteran players in any sport do, if they play that long and have that much success, is they kind of learn to adapt as things go on, and they change their game in ways to keep them, you know, mm-hmm. Not only relevant but also making an impact. And I feel like Brody, especially in the last couple of years, he's really learned how to control the pace of a game with his loose ball, abilities. Mm-hmm. You know, he's always been a dynamic loose ball player, one of the best of all time. But in the past, it was more like, you know, he'd pick up a loose ball and create offensive opportunities all the time, and that's great. And that, but now the game has kind of slowed down for him a little bit, where it's mm-hmm. less kind of high risk, high reward, where it's more so using his loose ball abilities to settle things down, yeah. right? You know. Providing more time for our offense to work, right, and controlling time of possession. You know, that's very important in our game, and you'll see that if, you know, we didn't do that well last weekend, where, mm-hmm. you know, we were just giving Georgia and New England too many repossessions offensively, and we didn't have the ball in our offenses thick enough, and the result kind of spoke for itself. Whereas I think, again, Brody and Cam Holding do that really, really well for our group. Mm-hmm. And we have a lot of other guys that can do that as well. But I think they're they're a real calming presence that way for the rest of our defensive group. And I know that our offense can, you know, really gains confidence from what they do, and what our defense and Frankie does as well. So he's key in a lot of ways.
So, like, taking off your brother hat and putting your coach hat on, the one bad home loss was against Vancouver, and that was the game where Brody was injured. Mm. Was the lack of having him on the floor for that game, was that a big impact on that game's results?
Yeah, I think so. And again, we don't like to make excuses for ourselves, but that was earlier in the year, and you know, it showed how much we rely on Brody, but all the rest of the guys as well. And I think it was more maybe overthinking it. You know, guys may be thinking, it's like, oh crap, we don't have...
you can curse it. Yeah,
we don't have Brody in the lineup. You know, I got to do more, or we're screwed because we don't have him in the lineup. And that wasn't the case, right? It was more, but you know, and again, you know, we were also losing, we were missing a couple other key defensive guys as well. And last weekend we saw that too, where we were losing, we were missing Garrett McIntosh, we were missing Kyle Hartzell, we were missing some guys that we rely on a lot, mm-hmm. you know, so, and same with at the offensive end, but we got to learn how to deal with that, you know, and that's a big part of playing in the playoffs as well. If you know, right now the NHL playoffs and the NBA playoffs are going on, and it made me think of this is, you know, a lot of times the teams that win have all these unsung heroes that kind of come out of nowhere, that step up and because, you know, your top players, they get keyed on, right? And they get scouted for and all that type of stuff. So you need different guys to step up at different times.
And you've got players to pick up at the airport.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if they want to really see me. and that's maybe part of the accountability piece that we were talking about earlier, but... after the two losses on the weekend, but no, it should be a good one tomorrow night. I appreciate your time, boys, and you guys are doing great work, and I love the fact that you guys are into it and you're really knowledgeable, and I guess we'll see you tomorrow night.
If you think you're knowledgeable, it means you didn't listen to the first episode. I gotta
tell you, we're trying
it's been
really
a long
hard.
Season.
honestly, you're doing an awesome job.
All right, thanks, man.
Thank you. Like I said, I thought Coach Merrill was really engaging, really interesting, and really got into the details of what goes into his job, you know, how he gets the team ready. And I thought it was interesting also getting into how hard it can be to game plan and get the video out there when the guys aren't necessarily here and he's only got one practice to solidify those game plans. So it really is a testament to the NLL coaches in that they have to execute in that, you know, 2 or 3 hour practice or whatever they have, because that's all they've got. There's not a chance to redo it. Thanks again to Coach Merrill for coming on. And, as we, I think kind of hinted at in the podcast, in the interview, this upcoming game on Friday against the Saskatchewan Rush is one of the most important games of the season. The Seals are currently half a game up on them, and they're fighting for home field advantage during the playoffs, or at the very least to clinch the first round playoff game at home, which would be great for us fans. So get out there. Let's support the team. Obviously, we crushed their spirits last time they played in the sports arena. And get out there and support our old pal, Woodsy. So for another edition of the Seal City ST podcast, go Seals!